You are listening to the Passion City Church podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church, including our gathering times in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com.
Well, I remember the day when I was a little kid when my dad gave me my first knife. Which I know sounds like a weird sentence to some of you, but I grew up in Texas, so children carrying around knives is like breathing. It's just the thing you do, you know? It's a tool. And so I remember when my dad gave me a knife, he didn't just hand it to me for the first like hour. He was like, here's your knife. And I'm like, oh, and he's like, no, no. And then so he just showed me how to open it and how to close it. He kind of worked the locking mechanism, explaining how it worked. Then he showed me the proper way to hand someone a knife and the proper way to receive one. And then he showed me how to carve away from yourself with the blade and began to show me all this different stuff. And then finally handed it over to me where I had to mimic those same motions with his coaching. And then he left me to carve little animals out of a bar of soap. And so after about an hour, I was there carving, and my brother came home. And my brother had just walked in the house and just apparently saw that he had gotten a knife too, and it was on the kitchen counter. And so he somehow bypassed my dad, grabbed his, ran outside to show off to me that he now had a knife. And so he ran outside yelling, I got a knife, and then went to open it very irresponsibly. And the way he did it drove the blade into his hand, and he's commenced bleeding and crying, which you've got to, if you're going to picture it, all that happened very swiftly. So it's kind of like, I got a knife, right? And then ran off, and I'm like, whoa. And then as he got bandaged up over the next hour or so, I remember when he sat down next to me, I suddenly just felt a swell of wisdom. I was just like, come and sit, learn by my side, watch from me, and your life will thrive. I'm like, look, as I carve away my little soap elephant. And I just felt so proud that I not only had power, I had the wisdom to harness it well, right? And I didn't appreciate it at the moment, but I appreciated it later. My dad just didn't give me a power. He gave me the wisdom to use it in a way that's constructive, not destructive. Do you see that? I bring that up because that's what we've been talking about in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs talks about a lot of different things, how to navigate relationships, but we've been in this section talking about different powerful elements, forces, things God has entrusted to us, but he's not just handed us dangerous things in life and said, fiddle with this and figure it out. He's given us wisdom on how to handle it well. So we've talked about words, that words can build up or tear down, and he gives us wise ways to use it. We've talked about sex, talked about all different kinds of things. Now today, we're going to talk about a substance with immense power that I feel like I heard this somewhere. I don't remember, but maybe I made it up in my head, but whoever made it up, it was good. And the question was, what would you think if I said to you, hey, there's a substance on the planet that has the power to fuel with energy every single home, has the power to run hospitals and run schools and power every home from the richest among us to the poor. It can power vehicles and it can raise up the quality of life among nations around the globe. But that same substance is also very volatile. And if used improperly, it can be absolutely destructive. It can blow up a home. It can blow up a nation. It can level cities. What would you think about a substance like that? You'd say, I've got mixed feelings about that. And what if I said, I want you to be the person who controls it? How would you feel about that? Some of you would say, I'll do it. I came to DC for power, give me the wheel, right? And you're ready. Others of you would be like, I don't want to do that. It's too scary. It's too much responsibility. What if I told you you had to? You don't have a choice, because that's the reality. The power I'm talking about that's been put in our hands today is a power all of us will have to control and manage. It's the power of money. How do you handle money? You channel money in the right way and it'll fund hospitals. It'll raise children out of poverty, educate and train them, and change the trajectory of their family for generations. It can do immense good in raising the quality of life in a city, in a nation, in the world. But money channeled the other way can be the source of war, poverty, disease, and untold evil amongst one another. That money channeled rightly can be constructive, channeled poorly can be destructive, and all of us are gonna have to manage it. And some of you have a lot to manage. Some of you are here and you're like, Ben, I don't love money. I don't have any money to love. Like, I'm not handling world-shaping money in my life. But the reality is you've got your own world. And the way you handle money can be something that breathes a lot of life into you, or the way you handle money can bring a lot of stress into your life and a lot of shame. And let me say this, because I saw in the early gathering, two things to qualify before we jump in. Number one is that my goal is not to shame anybody in here. So if I'm like, let's talk about your money, you're like, I'm not here to shame you. Book of Proverbs is gonna give us all wisdom and we all need to grow in this area. So there's no shame in the room. If you feel like you're crushing it or if you feel like you're being crushed by it, we're all gonna learn a little bit in this. The other thing I need to say is I'm not gonna do a second giving after this. So this isn't me like trying to get a new watch. You know, everyone that's kind of suspect about church is like, they're talking about money again, trying to slip out. Easy. I'm trying to help you today, not trying to help me. I'm trying to help all of us get into a place where the way we handle money is a source of life for us, something we feel good about, not something we feel bad about. Does that make sense? And the truth is, as a nation, we're struggling. We are. Read an article in Time magazine that said the total household debt of Americans right now, not national debt, but household debt is $13 trillion, which is the highest it's ever been. It had gone down from its previous height in 2008. So after the financial collapse of 08, we all took on less debt, but now we're back, baby, more debt than ever. So that's maybe not great. And some of us look at that and you go, well, Ben, some debt is good, like, you know, mortgage on a house, and that is true. And yet, we are taking on more debt as people in America than ever before, and we are carrying more debt into retirement than any previous generation. So older people entering into retirement are now entering with far less income, and that's a precarious place to be. Now, lest you sit here, many of you, and think, silly old people, how dare they do that? Let's talk about you, young people, because younger people are taking on debt at a higher rate and paying it off at a lower rate than even the old people. So, whoopsies, you're kind of in worse trouble. And older millennials, according to Northwestern Mutual, are carrying some of the highest debt, personal debt. That's excluding home mortgages. It's somewhere around $42,000 a person. And among older millennials, credit card balances are the leading source of debt, which is not great. Let me say again, I'm not trying to shame you. This is the book of Proverbs. Proverbs is just gonna come real. That's what Proverbs does, right? Proverbs is like that friend that'll come to you and say, hey, you should think about changing clothes. Everything's not working today. Like, that's the book of Proverbs. Like, you're like, hey, man, that's a little too real. But then they kind of saved you and you got your act together. That's the book of Proverbs. It's gonna come a little real, but you're gonna be better before it's all over. Does that make sense? So here we go. I wanna give you four facts the book of Proverbs is gonna give you about money, and then seven principles about how to handle it. You ready for that? So many points. Here we go. Buckle up. Four facts. Number one is that money's dangerous. It's dangerous. Money can make you crazy, right? We can be like Gollum with the ring, oh, precious, right? And just, we can get too locked into it and it'll lead you to do dangerous things. Proverbs 1, the father is warning the son about buddies that'll say, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. We shall find all precious goods and fill their house with plunder. And some of you go, well, I'm not planning on ambushing anybody after church. But the reality is, if we start to obsess about money, I need more, I don't have enough, it can lead us to violate our own moral compass. And we can do that. Even those of us who might have be well-intentioned people now, the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners does not estimate the amount of occupational fraud among businesses. They just look at cases of proven fraud that we've seen someone making the decision to steal from their company for their own financial benefit. They only looked at the cases they were made aware of proven fraud, and the number got up to $7 billion. $7 billion. Imagine the amount of human suffering that can be alleviated from the money that's skimmed out of businesses. I've seen this happen. I've seen it happen multiple times in ministries. Early in ministry, I realized, man, we got to put a lot of controls around that because well-meaning people can make a few bad decisions and end up in a place where they are taking money and it'll make you crazy. It'll make you reject God. That's what Proverbs 30 warns about. Agur says, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me the food that's needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Agur understood, man, money is dangerous. It can make me think I'm God and I don't need anybody. Give me a false sense of confidence. Or it'll make me crazy and I'll violate morality in the way I don't want to. Because money can deceive you. It can be deceptive. The greatest danger posed by money is it'll supplant one's trust in God. You see it in Proverbs 18 where it says, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous man runs into it and is safe. A rich man's wealth is his strong city and like a high wall in his imagination. Did you catch that? You're either gonna build your life on trusting God that he's gonna take care of me, or you can build it on the trust of money. But it says that's gonna be your strong tower and your imagination. Some people, their comfort and security in life is I got enough money to take care of myself. But the reality is that's a shaky foundation because money can flee. Proverbs 23 says, do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it's gone. For suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle towards heaven. Money is a bad place to find your security because it can sprout wings and leave. Money is a mistress that did not marry you for better or for worse. They married you for better. And if things turn sideways, they are gone, right? That's money. Not a good person to put all your hope in. Sports Illustrated reported on NFL players. By the time they had retired for 2 years, 78% of them had gone bankrupt or were under great financial distress. That money can fly. Unless you go, well, that's athletes. They got mixed in with the wrong crowd, whatever. I remember 2008. I remember I had invested in stock that had done super well. And I'm not necessarily good at investing in stock, but I was feeling pretty good about this. I'm like, this stock has done so awesome. It's gone up tenfold. And then in 2008, I'm like, it's all gone. It is now down to zero. Good thing I didn't build my hope on that because it is out, right? And it can go just like that. And it wasn't even my decision. But I remember in 2008, talking to a friend of mine who had been very wealthy and were investors. And I saw men that had been so strong and so proud weep because all their hope was in their money and it was gone. I had a friend who worked for a company that had some shady financial practices, so she took an early retirement and exited. Their company got busted for that. They went bankrupt, and her boss threw himself out a window. That money was his source, and when his money was gone, his reason was gone. Money can make you crazy. It's dangerous, right, to build your hope on it. And here's the other thing. It's limited. Money can build a house, but it can't build a home. Proverbs 15:14 says, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. Some of you, if you're not careful, you'll get on that treadmill of, I'm gonna work a lot of hours to make a lot of money because it's easy to track your success. And so you'll just go, I know if the dollar amount goes up, I'm winning. But if you chase that and work all your hours to build up your money and neglect your relationships, you might get more square footage, but you won't have any people to fill it. And I've counseled many people who did that. They got so into their careers because they wanted to amass wealth that they lost their families. And you go, how much additional income was worth that loss of your kids living in your home? How many square feet were worth that loss of intimacy in your marriage? And that sounds like a harsh way to say it, but I'm trying to warn us, that's dangerous. You start to chase money like that, you can lose the more precious thing. You gotta be careful with that. Money is limited. It can't give you everything. It can put food on your table, but it can't put fellowship around it. It can give you a boatload of jewelry and luxury, but it can't give you the love that you really want. Money's limited. But it is valuable. So let's talk positively for a second. It is nice to have. Because money, get you write that down. That's the tweet of the day. Money is nice to have. Because it gives you a level of autonomy. It does. Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is the slave of the lender. If you get into a place where you're having to borrow a lot, it limits your options, right? I knew some people that wanted to be missionaries to alleviate human suffering on the world, but they couldn't because they had strapped on so much debt. And debt was limiting their options. And yet I watched a show on Netflix about people trying to live in London. And you think the cost of living in DC is high. These people are like living in a sack of potatoes. I mean, they're literally like, I've leveraged out to live in the sack. You're like, wow, this is horrible. Like, you just can't afford to live. And then there was this couple that was maybe mid-30s, and they owned their home in the middle of London. They're like, how did you do it? And they're like, well, we decided that if we just paid the basic amount on our house, we would never pay it off. And if we ever did, we would pay three times what the house was worth. And so we just limited our spending on our personal lives to the absolute bare it could ever be. I mean, like literally counting grains of rice to eat. You're like, no, that's enough. Save those for tomorrow. And they said, we knew that 8 years of paying down that principal in earnest would give us our house and pay it at the lowest possible price. And so here they were mid-30s, and they're like, what happened now? And they're like, we've already paid off our house. And they're like, so what do you do now? And they're like, now we quit working in the summers and travel all around the globe. And you look at them, and you're like, what? They're so free. They're like, we can go wherever we want now. In fact, we're leaving. Ah, and they just were like, wow. There's so much liberty, just 8 years of paying off that principal, and then I am no longer the lender's slave. If you got money, it can give you autonomy. It can also open doors relationally. Proverbs always has a weird twist, but that's part of it. Proverbs 14:20, the poor is disliked even by his neighbor, but the rich has many friends. Now that proverb's cold-blooded. It's not saying it should be like that. It's just telling you the way the world is. It's saying if you don't have a lot of money, you're gonna get less texts and phone calls to hang out. You got more money, you got a lot of people coming at you. Now you know some of them just want something from you, but what that'll do is that'll open up doors and opportunities that maybe weren't open to you if you hadn't been successful. And so the reality is money can be very valuable for us. It can be a good thing if managed well. And that's the fourth thing, it is manageable. We can manage money, and God's given us ways to do it, ways that'll make us feel good about our lives and our principles and not sad and ashamed about the way we're doing it. There's ways to manage it that'll feel good. Money is like water. You get a rush of water with no boundaries, what happens? It creates a swamp that's not conducive to thriving life. But if you dam it up and don't let it out, what happens? It stagnates and becomes a cesspool. But if it's like a river, appropriate boundaries and flows, it can bring life to you and all those around you. That's the way money is. It's meant to flow into your life and out of your life in a healthy way. And if you do that, you're gonna flourish in life. So let's talk about some ways to manage it, and we'll go quick. Number one is to trust the Lord. And that's really the foundational idea, that the way the book of Proverbs will present it is, I am either gonna trust God that he built this world, he knows how this world works, and if I work it his way, I'm gonna flourish. That's what it is to trust God. You can live that way, or you can say, no, I'm going for mine. And then that's all on you. And the book of Proverbs will begin to speak to you that way, and it will say of wisdom, in Proverbs 8 and 9, there's two women speaking. Wisdom speaks, and she says, riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, my yield than choice silver. Wisdom says, if you follow me, you will have money, you will have riches, but you also have what is better than money, better than gold. You'll have wisdom. You'll leave a healthy life where you're successful not only financially, but relationally, emotionally, and spiritually. God promises, I'm gonna take care of you. The woman Folly also speaks, and she says, stolen water is sweet. Bread that's eaten in secret is delicious, but you do not even know that at the end of her path is death. That there will be another way that says, no, you do you, you go for yours. It doesn't matter what happened to them. If you can get it over on them, that's their problem. They're dumb and you're not, and you just go for yours. And that way of life shrinks your existence, doesn't expand it. There's death on the end of that road, right? And so you have to choose, do I trust God with my money or do I not? In the Bible, what's beautiful is there are natural consequences to being a generous person and a selfish person, but there's also supernatural. God puts himself in the equation. He says the reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. Honor the Lord with your wealth and the first fruits of your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. Now, some people love those verses. Some people, those verses freak them out because you're like, is he about to get health and wealth with me? Like, if you plant that seed of faith here at Passion, when you're going to go home, you're going to open a jar and suddenly find hundreds of dollars and be like, you did it again. Like, is that what I'm advocating? Sometimes crazy things happen. I don't know. You may walk out there and someone subbed out your little Civic for a Bentley. I don't know. But the reality is, often the way the world works, God will use very natural means to do that. You trust me and I'll take care of you. I know I learned this when I was first led a ministry at Breakaway. When I first stepped in to lead that ministry, we did not have much money. Actually, my first day leading the ministry, we had more bills than money. And I was like, questions I should have asked during the interview. Like, I've made a huge mistake. I was like, I've just become captain of the Titanic. Like, let's go, everybody. I was like, why did I do that? And it was very stressful. And so we started like trying to get money around and cut costs and save money and get this ministry going. But we were always kind of eking it out and just sort of coasting in on empty at the end of every semester. And like, man, this is really stressful. And then finally, I remember one time as I was praying about what God had for us in the future in the ministry, I felt like God was like, yeah, I want you to ask the students to give money. And I was like, yeah, it's about time they start kicking in around here. That sounds like a great idea. And I felt like the Lord was like, no, you need to take up money and give it away to ministries that are serving the community. And I remember thinking, no, God, we are the ministry, okay? People are supposed to give to us and then we help the people. Like, what are you saying? And I just felt like God was like, no, man, you need to trust me. And it was the craziest thing because we needed money, but I rallied our students to give money to other ministries in the city to alleviate human suffering that had nothing to do with them. Right? You know what the crazy thing happened was? Students gave more money than they ever had to us. It was crazy. So they could help women in crisis pregnancies. So they could help men who were getting out of prison and needed some job training and get them on their feet. That they were doing some incredible stuff. And then you know what else happened? We gave all that money away. And then that next year, what normally took us a year to bring in income, we got in half of a year. We doubled our income the next year. And then again and again and again. And that kept happening. And it could have been magic, or it could have been, I think, God rallying people of seeing, hey, that ministry is a part of something. I want to be a part of that. The life of the generous expands. The selfish world shrinks. I think when we honored God, he honored us. That's how it works. And that's what we're doing here as a church, incidentally, if you want to know. We're still very young in how we're growing and growing financially, but we chose to give a lot of money away to ministries in this city not that long ago. And we want to be part of the solution in the city of alleviating human suffering and coming around those who are helping the needy. And we want to be people who trust God to provide for us. We're going to be generous and trust he provides for us. You wouldn't want to come to a church that doesn't trust God, would you? So we're going to trust God with our money and we're going to trust he's going to provide for us. We're going to trust him because that's step one. The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the craving of the wicked. Number two is that we be good to people. We're good to people. That God loves people. And so if I love God and trust him, the next thing he's gonna show me is to be generous to other people. Proverbs 14:31 says, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. Do you wanna honor God? Do you wanna worship God? Songs are great. Scripture reading is amazing, but God delights when we give to those who won't necessarily give right back. Because we care for them. Why? For no other reason than God made them, and so they're stamped in his image and have dignity, and so I'm gonna take care of them. God delights in that, being good to people, and he blesses that. Proverbs 11 says, one gives freely and grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and suffers only want. And I've seen this happen. The life of the generous expands. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered. Now again, some people read that and go, okay, so does that mean if I give money, I should go home and some more money's gonna land in my wallet magically? Maybe, I don't know, God can do whatever he wants, but often God will just use means. You take care of people, I'm gonna take care of you, and I'll find a way to do it. I had a friend that had to go in for an emergency surgery. They messed up in a surgery, and so what was supposed to be a routine operation left him in that hospital for months. And his bills racked up astronomically. And by the time he left that hospital, he had six-figure bills that were about to change the trajectory of his entire family, his life, probably his kid's life. And that landed on him like a crushing weight of, I'll never pay this off. For the rest of my natural life, I can't deal with this. And as he was driving home from that hospital, there was a woman whose tire was flat and she was broken on the side of the road and she was kind of in a work outfit trying to figure this out. And he's like, you know what? I got nothing else going on and I'm just going to pull over and I'm going to help this lady in need. And so he helped this lady change her tire. She said, what's your name? Bop. They started talking, where you come from? I'm coming from this hospital. Oh, what were you doing there? Oh, I just got out of surgery. Oh, what surgery? If you don't mind me asking. Well, I did this. Oh, wow, why were you there so long? Oh, because this happened. She's like, oh, that's interesting. I'm the CFO of that hospital. Tell me your name again. And she wiped out his debt. Some of y'all are going to change every flat tire now you ever see. He's going to be praying for a flat tire in the name of Jesus. It's pretty incredible, huh? Of all the tires in the world, you came rolling into mine. I love this. I don't feel the pressure to cover every financial principle because our global pastor, Louis Giglio, has been talking about this the last couple weeks. And so if you don't follow Passion's podcast, jump on it, get him on board. But Louis talked about this. The normal way to live our lives is when we get our money in, the first question we ask is, what do I need to do to get the standard of living I want? And it's about my life. And then the next thing we do is we go, and if there's any left, I'll save it for my kids. And if there's any left after that, I will give it, right, to the needs of the world around me. And the call of the Bible is to flip that totally on its head. They say, I'm going to trust God with my life. And he said, love me and love people. So when someone hands me money, my first thought is, what am I going to give? I'm going to honor him with my first fruits. And what honors him is me caring for people. How am I going to give? What ministries am I going to support? How am I going to leverage my finances to make a difference in the world? I want to be that kind of person. So let me figure out first what I'm going to give. And then let me figure out what I'm going to save so I can give an inheritance to my family down the road. And then I adjust my standard of living to meet what's next. And that's the big change up for a lot of us in life. I may adjust the quality of my living because my priorities are going to be to give and then save for the next generation. Do you see that? That's a different way to live, but it's a better way to live. We all want to live that way. Proverbs 11 says, when it goes well with the righteous, a city rejoices. When the wicked perishes, there are shouts of gladness. We don't cheer for the wicked. We cheer for the generous. We want it that way. It's like It's a Wonderful Life. The movie, do you remember? Jimmy Stewart, that so many people don't remember. Anybody, like, I just got all these blank stares. Anyone ever seen it? Jimmy Stewart? Yeah. I'm the last on the moon. Anyone? All right, you got some homework. There's a guy named Jimmy Stewart, and he's running a bank, and that bank is generous and lends freely to people so they can build their homes and build it up. But then he's struggling and suffering. And so he gets discouraged that his generous life isn't paying off. And he's like, what if I was never born? And what happens? An angel shows him, what if someone who wasn't generous but stingy had control of the money? And do you remember what happened? It was Pottersville. And Pottersville was a cold place. Not a happy brisk, but a bitter, bone-chilling cold. And no one looked out for each other. No one cared for each other. And the world was a much worse place. And Jimmy Stewart realized, I want to live, and I want to live in a way where I'm generous, because when I'm generous, the city rejoices and there's life. That's the world we want. We want a life like that. We don't want to be Ebenezer Scrooge. We want to be Scrooge after the ghost almost killed him and he was buying turkeys for kids and stuff like that. You want to be that Scrooge. All right. Number three is we work hard. We work hard. Proverbs 12:24 says, the hand of the diligent will rule, the sloth will be put into forced labor. That the reality is, when it comes to money, we work hard to get paid. That whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. I love that. You work the land, you're gonna have bread. You follow worthless pursuits, you are gonna, how does it say it? You lack sense. It doesn't just say like, you're not gonna have bread. He assumes you get that. He's like, you don't do that. It's because you're not thinking, right? I remember for me when I was in college, I mowed yards with a guy. And I was like, man, what's making you work this hard? He was like, I wanna be able to pay for my first home in cash. And I was like, what? You're like 19. Why are you even thinking like this? I was like, I'm getting this money to buy things that are shiny and neat. You know, I'm like, and this guy's like, I'm gonna save money for the down payment of my home. And then I'm like, you're such a weirdo. And then he got older and paid for his first house in cash. And I was like, what was I doing with my money? I don't even know what I was doing. I was like, a mountain of tacos, okay. I mean, I was like, I don't even know what I was doing. I lacked sense, right? But I remember for me when I realized I wanted to get married. I had so many guys when I worked in college ministry was like, man, I want to get married to this girl. What do I do? I was like, do you have enough money to take care of her? And they always hate that question because they were like, what money? And we're going to live on love, man. I'm like, dude, her dad is going to so hate that question. He's going to say, love don't pay the rent around here. Beat it. I was like, love makes you earn the money to pay the rent. And so I realized I got to work hard. I was working like six jobs to get out of debt so I could look at Donna's dad and tell him, I'm gonna take care of her. And she has the freedom to work, pursue her dreams, do whatever she wants to do. But I'm taking the responsibility for better or for worse. I've put ourselves in a situation where I can take care of her. You want that story. And that story's going to come, if for me, for working a lot of different jobs at that time. But you may need to find a way of going, I'm going to work hard. And then I'm going to have something to shame. When I work the land, I'll have plenty of bread. And there's a lot more I can say about that, but that's coming next week. So we'll skip on to that, to number four, which is be content. Be content. Proverbs 21 says, whoever loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. Better to be lowly and have a servant than to play the great man and lack bread. Dave Ramsey used to tell the story of, in his early days, he wore expensive suits, drove a Jag, had a platinum card that he would pray every time they ran it that it wouldn't get rejected because his bank account was empty. And he said, I was playing the great man, but I was constantly stressed and ashamed because I was leveraged out to the eyeballs in debt. And the book of Proverbs says, don't be that guy. Don't be the $30,000 millionaire. You know what I'm talking about? That's such a Dallas thing for me. I lived in Dallas for a while. Like, there's a lot of people living like they're a millionaire and they're making about 30 grand. You know what I'm talking about? Where you're like, how do you afford a place like this? Because I'm adding up what you do for a living in this house. And unless you're selling some illegal things on the side, A and B, this is not adding up. You don't want to be that person leveraged to the eyeballs. And so what do you got to do? You got to be content with what you have. And many people, when they step out into that first job and get that first paycheck, they're like, finally, I get to buy that huge TV and that nice couch and that great watch. And we begin to try to get our standard of living to the kind, for some of us, we had back home in our parents' home, but you don't make their kind of money yet. And the reality is you got to wait. I can't catch up with my peer group. I can't keep up with that person. I got to see what my money is and live within my means and be content with what I have. One of my favorite proverbs, you want to hear proverbs coming real, is Proverbs 23. It says, when you sit down to eat with a ruler, observe carefully what is before you and put a knife to your throat if you're given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies. They are deceptive food. He says, you're going to get around the rich and you're going to want to try to keep up with their lifestyle and you're going to become a borrower and become the slave of the lender. Or you're going to have to compromise morally or you might make some decisions you regret. Let me tell you something. It says, so if you get to that table and you start wanting their food, just go ahead and pick up that knife and put it to your throat, not the steak. And you're like, that's too real, Proverbs. That's dark, right? But what it's telling you is what you got to control is that appetite. Maybe it's not time to buy that new car. Maybe it's not time to leverage out that far to get into that house. You got to make those decisions to be content with what you have and be patient. That's number five. Understand delayed gratification. Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. When I was in high school, I had a buddy of mine that we used to go lift weights together. And we would always joke about that. We would go to the gym and we'd work out for like 30 minutes. And at the end of it, I'd be like, I feel strong. Are you strong? Yeah. Okay, we did it. So we don't have to work out anymore. We've achieved strong. And we would leave. And the joke of that was always, one workout ain't gonna do it. It's not like, well, I did it. Glad that's over. And I will be in fit, healthy shape the rest of my life. That's not how life works. You have to keep going back and keep going back day in, day out. And it hurts and it's painful. It makes you sad inside. Maybe that's just me. Y'all all seem like you're enjoying it. You know, it's difficult. But over time, it hurts less and you're less sad and you do well, right? And it's the same with giving and saving. Some of you don't give much because you say, I don't have much to give. And you feel like it'd be embarrassing what little you have. It honors God what little you have. He loves that. Some of you don't save at all because you go, man, it's just so much. I've got no margin. I'm living right up to the hilt of my income. And you go, you know what? Let's back off a couple things. And maybe you only give a little bit at a time. And it might feel very small, but it's a step of faith. And little by little, as you save, it'll grow. And you'll look back a year later and say, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I started putting a little bit aside, a little at a time, and getting it done, right? And number six, I would say get around wise people. Get around wise people. He who walks with the wise will become wise. Some of you might have grown up like I did. I didn't necessarily have that dad that at 5 years old was like, I am now going to teach you how to invest, right? I have an uncle like that, that he just taught his son, like, here's how you play the stock market. You know, the kid's like seven, you know, like selling corn futures. But I wasn't really that guy. And so I realized I don't really know how to handle money wisely. And so what I had to do is start to look around and find some people who would help me. When I first got a job, I realized I don't really know how to control money. I don't know how to do it. And I was routinely paying bills late and paying charges for that. I'm like, I don't want to live like that anymore. And I had to come to my pastor and say, you got to help me, man. And he helped me set up an automatic withdrawal for savings. I'm not even going to see that money. And he helped me set up an auto withdrawal for giving. I'm going to do that. And that way I'm sort of forcing myself to live on what's less and start to take control of my money where it didn't feel like it was controlling me, but I was controlling it and it was flowing the directions I wanted. But I wouldn't have got there without Ken. Later, as I took over at Breakaway, I realized that I need some wise men around me, a council of men that'll help me think wisely. And as I got older, they helped at Breakaway go from barely paying the bills to really flourishing and having a surplus that we were able to give away to other ministries in the town and really start to get things rolling and serving the city. And they also helped me personally too, figure out how to invest and save and how to plan for my kids and my family so that if something happens to me, they'll be okay. Getting around wise counsel may be the best for you. Maybe an easy start is to listen to Louis' podcast, listen to Dave Ramsey's, come to community group and start to look for people that seem like they got their life together and ask them how much they make annually. And no, I'm just kidding, don't do that. But get to know some people. And as I got to know these guys, I realized, I think you're better at this than me. Every now and again, you say things about finances I don't understand and the words sound big. And as I got to know them, they helped me. And walking among the wise helped me become more wise. And then the last thing I would say, the last point, is repent. Repent. And you go, what do you mean by repent? Well, repent means a change of mind, but a change of mind that leads to a change of life. That I was going one way and I don't want to go this way anymore. And some of you may be looking and you're like, I've just been not malicious with the way I do money, but I've been careless. I just haven't thought about it. And so I don't feel great about it. But when I die, I want to be someone who left a wake of blessing behind him. I want to be a generous person. And my lifestyle's not adding up to that. I want to change. And that'd be a great place to start. Others of you, maybe you do. As I've been talking about this, you're like, dude, I hate this sermon. Because I want my money on my things. And the reality is, man, you look at that life and you go, man, the life of the stingy shrinks. The generous, it expands. And you go, you know what? I need to turn directions. And here's the good news. It's never too late. It's never too late. Like Ebenezer Scrooge, right? He was selfish with his money and his world shrank. And then God in his mercy sent a bunch of scary ghosts to terrify him. And then what happened? He became a pretty decent dude, right? And as he was generous, he gained a family of people he could care for who cared about him, right? Now here's the thing. Charles Dickens just ripped that off from the Bible, right? They all do, man. Because there's a story in the Bible about Zacchaeus. If you've never read about Zacchaeus, he was a guy that became a tax collector. That meant I get money from my community, and the way it works back then is I skim off the top, so I exploit those with less power for my financial benefit. That was Zacchaeus. And you're like, you can do that in that community, and you can get richer, but you get no friendships, and no one wants to be around you. So he was isolated relationally because he was selfish financially. That's Zacchaeus. And then Jesus comes to town. And Jesus is walking in, and he's the miracle worker. People want to see him. But Zacchaeus got a problem. He's a little guy, short. So Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Wee little man was he. Right? So what does he do? Climbs up that tree, get a look at Jesus. And what does Jesus do? There is a man who's exploited us. Tear him from that tree, right? Is that what Jesus does? He doesn't come with judgment. He doesn't come with shame. He doesn't come with guilt. What does Jesus do? He comes with grace. He parts the crowd and comes right towards Zacchaeus. No one else in that town would do that. No one else did. And he walked up to Zacchaeus and was like, what are you doing in that tree, little man? He said, get down from there, because I want to hang out with you today. And that changed Zacchaeus' life. Some people read that and you go, why was that so monumental for him? Because nobody was doing that with him. But Jesus came to him, and he's coming to you. You may feel some shame about your financial situation. You may feel a lack of security and fear around it. Jesus is not coming to you today with shame or judgment or condemnation. He's coming with grace. Hey, I want you to eat with me. I want you to hang with me. I want you to realize that I love you. I want what's best for you, and you can trust me. And when Zacchaeus had a life-changing encounter with Jesus, do you remember what he said? I'm gonna pay back everybody I wronged, and I'm gonna give away a significant percentage of my income to the hurting in this city. Jesus didn't tell him to do that. Jesus didn't make him do that. Jesus didn't make that a prerequisite to being okay. But an encounter with Jesus changed him. Why? Because God is generous with us, and that frees us to be generous to others. When we are loved, we can love. When we see that he's trustworthy, we can trust him, and then we can entrust our money in the way he says to use it best. So if you're here today and you're like, dude, I don't know what I think about all this, I would just encourage you, keep coming back. Take nothing else away from this. Then just keep coming back and listen to what Jesus is like. That he's not come to shame you, not come to condemn you. He's come to love you and heal you and set you free. And the more you trust him, the more you're gonna trust his way of living, and the more you're gonna find your world expands, doesn't shrink. And for those of us who know him, maybe we're saying, I trust him with so many other areas of my life. I have so much fear around money. Don't feel any shame about that. Even today, just say, Lord, I wanna trust you with this. That'd be a great place to start. Will you change my heart? Settle me that your name is a strong tower. And if I run to it, I'm gonna be safe. And then from that place of safety, Lord, make me thrive with generosity. Because I wanna be like you. You left a wake of blessing behind you, and I am in that wake. And I wanna leave a wake of blessing behind me in the way I speak to people, in the way I treat people, and the way I handle money. I wanna be a source of life until the day you call me home. That's possible, but it starts with trusting him.
If you were encouraged by today's talk and believe it would be uplifting to others, then be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church podcast.